Thank you. Hi, my name's Buzz and I am a drunk. What's that sixth step again? Is anybody here is not willing to turn their life over to God as you understand God? Anybody that doesn't want to do that? I ask my guys that when I'm going through with them. You know, after we get done with chapter 5 and we get to step 6, and I said, do you really want to turn your life over to God? Do you really want to change? If you don't want to change, then, you know, you might as well go home. Because the rest of these steps are about change. In fact, the first 5 are all about change. But until I got done with that 5th step, I didn't know what I was supposed to change. I drank too much, I knew that. You know, and I drank too often, I knew that. And I had a lot of people tell me that. My parents told me that when I was little. Yeah, I'm young enough that before this subdivision was in over here, before there was a fire hall here, there was a drive-in theater over there. Some of you might remember that. And us kids in the neighborhood, because I grew up just a block down here, had a little camp-out place behind the drive-in, and we'd stole speakers and dragged them back there, and we had our own little movie theater in the back. All we had to do was sneak in through the woods, right? And they put a stop to that when they caught us at halftime, you know, in between movies, the lights would all come on. And we sit back there shooting them out with a .22, and they frowned on that. They didn't think that was a good idea. My life was unmanageable from the very start. As a young kid, my life was unmanageable. I did what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it, however I wanted to do it. And I didn't want anybody telling me what I should do. You know, if you told me what I should do, I was going to do the opposite. I don't know why. I don't think I'm a rebel. That's just the way I thought, you know. Don't tell me what to do. I'm going to do as I damn well please. And when I took that step, when I made a decision to take that step, my sponsor says, do you really want to change your life? And I wasn't sure. So he just closed the book. He said, I'll see you later. I said, what do you mean? We're supposed to do it. He says, if you don't want to change, there's no sense in us even talking about this. Reading it ain't going to change you. All right? Talking about it ain't going to change you. You got to want to change in here. If you want to change, it's going to be hard and it's going to be tough and there's a lot of things you're not going to be able to do. And that was so true. All right? Because by nature, I didn't want to change. I didn't want people changing. But see, he scared me. I said, open the book back up. I want to change. And I wasn't sure whether I really wanted to change or not. But I knew I didn't want to drink anymore. All right? I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I'd been that way for a long time. Long before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. But I didn't know what else to do about it. Every time I quit drinking, it would last for a while. I might get to feeling a little better, and I'd get a little money in my pocket, and then I'd go get drunk again. Because I would think I was, it's been 3 months, 4 months, whatever. I haven't had a drink, and so, what the heck? I can do this thing. There ain't nothing to that. I'm really an alcoholic because I can quit. In fact, I got so good at quitting, I could quit 4 or 5 times a day. I just couldn't stay quit. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and took those first 5 steps. And when I took that 4th step and figured out what my problem was me. It's the way I thought, the way I, like I said, I didn't think I was a rebel, but I guess I was, because I just didn't want to do what anybody told me to, all right? And my mind didn't work well. In fact, I was talking to Kent Coleman. Some of you might know Kent. I was talking to him today, and he said, Albert Einstein said, you can't solve a problem with a mind that creates them. And that was me, all right? When he said that, I said, that's me. I create problems, all right? Not intentionally. I just create problems. They just come out. If you say it's black, I'll say it's white. If you say it's pink, I'll say it's blue. I love to argue. I love to fight, fist fights, brawls, street brawls, barroom brawls. I loved all that stuff. I loved action. And it didn't matter how I got it. I come into this fellowship and we got through that fifth step, and sponsors started showing me. I started figuring out where I was wrong, where my thinking was wrong. And so I wanted to change the way I thought. And so in order to change the way I thought, I had to ask this higher power for help. Now, step two and three, I got back to the God of my understanding as a little kid when I went through catechism. And I believed in him. And I always believed that. I just figured I was so bad and so rotten that he didn't want nothing to do with me, so I was going to hell anyhow. So I might as well go full bore. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that sneaks in the back door. I go in the front door and you know I'm there. So that's the way I was going to go through life. And if I'm going to hell, they're going to know it when I get there. And that's the way I went. I took that sixth step, and you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous there, is in page 76. We've got 76 pages, and we've got first five steps done. Now we're on page 76, and here's step six and step seven. They're two paragraphs. So I figure when I seen that can't be very damn important, step six and seven. Step six is, we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we admitted are objectionable? Am I willing to let God take all those things that in my character defects that are objectionable to him away from me? Well, how about if I just take the ones that are objectionable to me? You know, maybe all my character defects aren't so bad. And you know, when I came in here, there were some of the things that I thought were really bad that I did when I was drinking. I found out it ain't so bad. But there were some things I just ignored, didn't think were bad, that I found out were really bad. You know, gossip and lying and cheating and stealing and all those things. I thought that was part of life. I didn't think those were really bad. You know, murder was bad. I didn't do that willfully, but I had killed a guy with an automobile, so I understood that. There were none of them Ten Commandments that the God of my understanding wrote up that I hadn't broken when I got here. So I couldn't figure him having any will for me at all, other than to fry, and I wasn't particularly wanting to fry, but the pain was too bad. So, you know, so I said I was willing to get rid of these objectionable character defects. And if I'm willing, that means I got to turn them over to God. So I had to ask God to be willing, and I can remember sitting at my sponsor's kitchen table one time and holding hands, and we talked to God about taking away my character defects. And the way we did that is step seven, all right? When ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Well, if it was going to interfere with God and my fellow man, then I'd be happy. But there were some of my character defects that maybe didn't bother anybody else. No, just bothered me. So maybe I wasn't going to have to get rid of them. Grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding. Amen. And it says, we have then completed step 7. Now, holy cow. All these pages, and we just did step 6 and step 7. See? That was pretty easy. I thought, boy, I skated through that one, right? But see, every time I gossip, every time I lie, every time I cheat a little bit, every time I lie a little bit, I'm not turning my life over to God as I understand it. I'm not doing what He wants me to do. I'm now willing you should have all of me, good and bad. See, I only wanted Him to have the parts I wanted to give Him. I didn't want Him to take the whole works. There were some things I kind of liked, you know. So I wanted to hold on to some of them. So if I held on to them, all right, I didn't think that was a bad idea. I'd turn the rest of my life over to Him. But see, the problem is, the longer I'm sober, the longer I'm following you people around, all right, that repetition I talked about a couple weeks ago keeps coming back and haunting me. I hear you guys say it over and over and over, that this problem is a problem, that problem is a problem. And I said, well, geez, it might be for you, but it isn't for me. But see, if I'm around here long enough and I keep coming to these meetings, I realize these problems are for me. They're my problems. If it bothers me, if I hear you talking about something, or if there's something that keeps cropping up in my mind that I think isn't a problem, but it keeps coming up, it's a problem. And if it's a problem, then I got to do something about it. And what I got to do about it is turn it over to God, that seventh step. I got to ask God, I got to go through that prayer, and I got to ask God to take it away. And sometimes I got to ask for a long time. I have a very bad mouth. I got a truck driver's mouth, all right? And I spent 30 years going into the prison with the message, carrying the message in there, so that didn't help any. That was the wrong place to go to correct my truck driver's mouth. And my wife really gets on me every once in a while. My daughter gets on me, you know, because if I'm not careful, if I get mad or I get upset, the words come out of me that embarrass me when I say them. But they come out. They come out. And I've prayed and I've prayed and I've prayed. All right? And I keep praying. So evidently it isn't as objectionable to Him yet as it is to me, or He's just letting me suffer for a little longer. But I keep working on it and I keep trying. All right, and hopefully I don't do it up here tonight, you know. And I try. So I, you know, I've been around here a long time. I've been around here so damn long, and I'm so damn dry now that I'm a fire hazard. All right, it's a good place for me in a fire department. But it's a thing that one of my character defects is just hard for me to get rid of. You know, and I have it, I become addicted to weird stuff, like toy trains. Kevin can tell you, he's been upstairs in my house, and I have 2 bedrooms and a walk-in closet full of toy trains. It's a habit. Habit bullshit, it's a compulsion. When I see a toy train, I want it. You know, I don't want it now. And no matter what the cost, my wife doesn't always appreciate that. So I still have a lot of character defects, and I'll probably have character defects to the day I die. But I think that step 6 and 7 are the really the most important two steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. They may be awful short in a book, but there's something I have to do every day of my life. I have to turn my will over to God and let Him take them character defects away rather than me trying to do it myself. Because like Einstein said, you know, if I got a sick mind and healing it with it ain't going to work with another sick mind, you know. So I can't cure my sick mind with my own sick mind. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you people teach me how to listen to what God tells me. And as I listen to what God tells me, my character defects get less and less. Practice, practice, practice. You know, step 6 and 7 is just nothing more than practicing those character defects that we talked about in chapter 4 and 5. It's practicing the opposite of those character defects. If I'm practicing the opposite of those character defects and I work on it on a daily basis, on a regular basis, my life gets better. All right? So it's practice. So when I say practice, you know, I talk about practice a lot, and I've told you people, I think, a couple times now, that the American saying is practice makes perfect. Well, none of us are ever going to be perfect. But repetition makes a master. So the more I do something, the more I work these steps in my life, the more I apply these steps in my life, the better I get at applying them in my life. And so that's to me, step 6 and 7. And see, I don't know how to separate those two, because if I'm really willing to have God remove these defects of character, then I got to turn it over and I got to do it right now. I can't say, okay, I'm willing to do it and then go home and get involved with my trains or go squirrel hunting or something. I say squirrel hunting, that little dog of yours reminds me of the big one. I used to have one of them one time called a Missouri Feist. They're used for squirrel hunting in the Ozarks. I sold it for $360. I picked him up in the Humane Society. But he's a hell of a squirrel dog. But, see, that dog's just been bothering me all night. I didn't like that little dog. I might have to take him home with me. But I think that's enough for me to talk about 6 and 7. Clock went out. Am I that far over?
Yep.
I went that far over? Okay, let's go on. Anybody got any questions?
Thanks, Buzz. At this point, any questions anybody has for Buzz? We've got 20 minutes.
My grandson was 8. He was trying to try out for the swim team when he was learning how to swim. And one time he came home from the Y as he was practicing, and he said, "Grandma, I got from one side of the pool all the way to the other." And grandma's, of course, they're always encouraging. I'm like, "Mitchell, oh my gosh, you were swimming." He goes, "No, Grandma, I was practicing." As soon as he said that, I'm like, you know what? I've used that. He's 24 now. I use that all the time. If I practice these principles, if I practice what the program tells me to do, then I'm more likely to get a little better at it. But if I give up, like, there's no hope for me, and I let myself down by not continuing to practice, then I'm more likely to probably pick up again. So that practicing reminds me, you know what, if I don't get it right today, maybe I'll do better tonight, or maybe I'll do better tomorrow morning. And just realize that, like you said, we're never going to be perfect, but practice does make us have a reprieve, like, I'm okay today. I didn't do that great, but I can do better. So the fact that I don't have to be perfect today I don't have to continually compare myself to somebody else that I think is doing so good and I'll never live up to that. As long as I keep practicing, I got a good shot at staying sober. That's all I have.
All right.
Thanks, Buzz.
Thanks, Buzz. Do you think it makes sense making a list of your character defects and so you can you'll know what to pray to have removed?
We did that in step five. In step four and five, we made a list in four, and in five we used that list, and we went over it with our sponsors, supposedly. And if you go over that list in step five, now you know what your character defects are. Maybe not all of them, all right, but you know the majority of them, and you know what to start working on. And once you start working on them, then when you take six and seven, all right, you're using that same list. That's why I tell my guys, don't throw that list away, because when we get to seven and eight, we're going to use it all over again. All right? If you got any resentments, and then in seven and eight, we're going to have to use them to find out who to make our amends to. Okay?
Anybody else?
That practice, you know, I told you I had a little trouble with my language sometimes. My first lead in 4 months was at the Dobbs Group in Girard, the county home. And there was probably this many people there. It was usually four or five people. But they come to all to hear this idiot think of what he knew. And I was pretty rough on my language. And after all the people had come up to the podium and thanked me and left, there's two people left, an old guy and his wife, old Mike Black and his wife, Honey. And they come up and they said, thank you, and Mike handed me a card about using the Lord's name in vain. He didn't say anything to me, he just handed me that card. See, but it was so bad at that first lead. You know. So I don't think I swore tonight, did I?
No.
So I'm getting better. I sure as hell ain't cured it, but I keep working on it, all right? Anything else?
Hold on.
That's the guy that taught me everything I know.
I've had a few problems in my life lately, and all I can say is I'm here. As far as my character defects, I've turned them over. But I pick them back up once in a while. I like to work on them, I guess. I'm like you, Buzz. I do the best I can with what I got. I'm used to being real active. This is hard for me, being in a wheelchair and everything, mentally. I ain't complaining, I'm just telling you. You know, you run into things in your life. But nothing happens in God's world by mistake. I got my granddaughter here with me. And we come to this meeting last week. She liked it, thank God. She's been going to meetings ever since. So all I can say is thank you. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. You got to tell you, I never drank with Joe. I drank with his mom and dad. Knew them well. Joe was already an outlaw. See, Joe and I were a lot alike. Our parents were in business, right? And I did probably a lot of things to my parents when I was drinking. that he probably done close to the same thing. You see, I was disowned after I was in my 20s. I got a registered letter in the mail. I'm married and got six kids, and I get a registered letter in the mail from my father's lawyer. I was legally disowned, and don't ever talk to my mom and dad again. And that's where alcoholism took me. Thanks, God, to the Alcoholics Anonymous and a God of my understanding, I was able to sit at the bedside with both my dad and my mom when they were dying. I was able to be there for them and take care of them for several years before they died. But right up till they died, I was able to make my amends to them the best I could. And one of the ways I'm still trying to make amends to my dad is by standing up here and sharing my story with other people. All right, and to me, that's part of making my amends to my family, to help somebody else's family that they don't have to go through the same thing. So, any other questions?
Guys, have you heard or tried the like chip method or the piece of paper where you write down all your character defects and throw them in a jar and grab one for the day and try to focus on that, or you just whatever pops in your head?
I've heard about that, but I've never done that. All right, I have a hard time organizing anything. When I get out of bed in the morning, I get my coffee made, and I sit down in my recliner, and 90% of the time I remember to pick up my big book and daily reflection and 24-hour book. But sometimes I forget that, you know. If my wife got up before me and she turned on television, I can get sidetracked on that television and I won't remember to do that till lunchtime, or maybe supper time, or maybe the next morning I open up my book and there I'm already 2 days behind, you know, and I catch up. So I'd like to say I tried that, but I never tried it. Because I know me. You know, if I put this stuff in a jar, I can't even keep change in a jar. You know, I try saving pennies. You know, when I get a little bit in there, I got to count it up, say how much. Well, hell, that's enough for a candy bar. I'll spend it. So I just not my personality to do those kind of things. I know people that do them, and it's, you know, it's a great thing, but not for me.
Any other questions? Don't let him off that easy.
I'm an alcoholic. But I just have to say, I've known you for a long time, and I never knew that about your parents. I mean, like, I'm really alcoholic. I went out,
see, to me, there's sobriety, which means not drinking, all right? And to me, I want to be happy and useful besides that. Happy, joyous, and free. I know a lot of guys that don't drink, that have been in a program for a long time. They really probably can't tell you anything about the steps. Probably have never read the big book. Maybe they have, maybe they haven't. Maybe they got away from it. But see, to me, that repetition, going to meetings, practice, change is the way I think and the way I act, just like you're talking about. Had I not, if I don't do that, I'm going to just be a dry drunk. See, and that's not what I was looking for. I tried that many times. I had a couple one-year periods, you know. I became a, I don't know if any of you here old enough remember, Ewell Gibbons used to be the guy that wrote in the paper about living off the land. And, you know, I had my kids eating cattail roots, and, you know, I wouldn't leave the farm. I became such a recluse just because I drank, I was not drinking, that if my wife wanted a loaf of bread, I'd put all six kids in a car and go uptown to get a loaf of bread, because I had a thing about not taking my kids in a bar. And I was basically a barroom drinker. So I'd take all six kids, go get a loaf of bread, and come right back home. But if I didn't take them six kids, I might get the loaf of bread, but I might not come home for 3 or 4 months, you know. So that's the way I drank. So to me, it's practice, practice, practice. I don't want to go back to that. And see, when I quit drinking, it was more than the quitting drinking. It was the lifestyle I was leading, the lifestyle I was living. Because the more I drank, the farther down that slope I went. I went to bars where I'm not even sure the owner knows where they were. You know, the Black Kettle down in Cambridge Springs. Cherry Hill Country Club out to Albion. You know, some of those really, really nice upper-class places, you know. Cherry Hill Country Club was a nice place. You didn't drink out of the glasses, because they used the jelly jars for glasses, and they probably didn't wash all the jelly out yet. I remember Bucker got a pizza machine in there. He was so proud of that pizza machine. I was there the first night he tried it out. And it was a little oven, electric oven that sat on the back bar, and you put an oven in there and you turn this thing on, and so many minutes, and the pizza's ready to go, right? Well, Bucky, he's a class act. I mean, he reaches in there and he burns his hand. It was hot. So he reaches in and pulls out his snot rag, slides the pizza and takes it over to the customer. I never forget that, but that's the nice kind of places I drank, you know. You didn't, you know, when you went in, you might have to chase the chickens off the bar stool. I bought a horse in there one night. I have no record. Inside the bar, I bought it. It was outside, but it got dark, so I couldn't. I didn't get a good look at it, so Bucky said, bring it in, I guess. And I brought it in, and the horse immediately showed his gratitude, I guess, and crapped all over. This is what they tell me. Crapped all over the pool table, and a couple guys shooting pool, and they really got upset, and Bucky said, don't worry about it, he's buying a horse. I woke up in the morning, crossways of the bed, and Gina says, what's that paper in your pocket? I don't know, I pulled it out, and I couldn't read it, I handed it to her. She says, you bought a horse last night. I said, I didn't buy no horse last night. She said, this is a bill of sale for a horse at Buckner's. I bought the horse. So I did a lot of things that, you know, I wish I hadn't done. We kill enough time.
Anybody want to try to top that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't bring it home that night. I had to go out the next day and get it. Because I had the car that night. I couldn't get it in the back of the car. Yeah, I bought it in the bar, but I rode my horse in a lot of bars. I got thrown out of a lot of bars. When you ride your horse in, they don't like that. Well, you know, I had cutting horses and reining horses, and so you put pretty good cocks on their shoes, you know, which is a lip that sticks down on their shoe. So when you walk around on the floor like this, it just tears them all up, you know.
All right, thanks.